Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the big show, the only show tonight, yes, the 437th edition of the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll get you to talk about, of course, the wonderful game of soccer, football in this country, talk about our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You get your daily reading from me and other writers over at onceametro.com and the rest of the SB Nation family of websites. Come on in. Chat room is open. You can talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. Today's monologue, you know, it's amazing to see what these playoffs have been about. These playoffs, one and dones, have been unbelievable, filled with action, suspense, and drama. And don't get me wrong, I am a traditionalist when it comes to goal aggregate with away goals. I think they bring just as much excitement as a single elimination win, move on, lose, you're done. But the way that we've seen the offense go in these playoffs has been unbelievable to see what we have seen in this situation. I just think that what we have seen so far, it's great. I truly believe that what we have here right now is a very good answer for the time being. Now, I know that most of you, or those of you that are screaming for promotion and relegation, I've said this many, many times, and I'll keep on saying it until I'm blue in the face. Yes, I want it to have promotion and relegation, but obviously until then, we're going to have playoffs. Until every single club in every single league, every single owner or ownership group are going to come together and say, we want this. Right now, it's playoffs. And some of you are going to say, well, you know, LAFC won the Supporters' Shield as the best team in the regular season. Why can't they just, you know, why are they not officially the champions? Well, unfortunately, in this country, it doesn't work like that. Or in North America, it doesn't work like that. And I'm not criticizing those that believe that this is not how it's supposed to be. Not criticizing it. But up to this point right now, it's working. It is working. I think what we have seen so far has been very, very good. And at the moment, I'm happy with it. Until the changes do come, we have to stay where we are. It's only the right way to do these things. At this point and at this particular time. But we do need time. We do need time to make sure that all of our ducks are in a row. That is for sure. So until then, we keep it the way it is. It's not ideal, but we keep it the way it is for now. Like I have said many, many times, it all must come together. It all must come together. Once we can actually make that move, and it could take a long time. Without a doubt, it could take a long time to get to that level. But until then, we are where we are. It's not ideal. It's not great. But for the time being, it's called survival. I know you don't like it, but for now, it's got to be done. It has to be done. So we can survive and we can finally get to that level of where everyone wants to go. It's difficult, I know. But so far, this is where we have to be. But let me just say this. And I want to say this because I think, to be fair of the process of to crowning a champion here in North America, or at least in MLS. For now, these playoffs have been fantastic to watch. I have been enjoying this since the opening day of the playoffs. It's been really, really good, and I've enjoyed it. How many goals did you expect to see get scored all the time? I mean, we've had two games where in the opening round of the wild card round, it's been 7 goals here, 7 goals there. Winning in extra time. A little disappointed we didn't get to a penalty kick shootout, but you know what? That's okay. I would have loved it. I would have, watched it. I would have loved to have seen it. But it didn't happen. But that's okay. It's quite all right. Not gonna cry over spilled milk. But boy, oh boy, if we ever got into a penalty kick shootout, it would have been awesome. We might get one in the finals. We might absolutely get one in the finals. You never know. We'll see what happens. But one thing is for sure, if I can just say this, you can see success with the playoffs the way they are now. A lot of action, a lot of tinkering. It's been a goal fest. But at the same time, you're seeing some amazing chances being converted here. And as of right now, I'm happy. As of right now, I'm happy. I'm enjoying it. Without a doubt, I think we have ourselves a strong moment of maybe fixing this situation when it comes to no interference with the November international break. But the one thing that I believe needs to be fixed is the beginning of the schedule. If we're going to have playoffs between the international breaks of October and November, we need to fix the schedule. And I've said this before because I've been looking at the 2020 schedule. Now, I have to take a look. This is what I do every single year. I always go on the computer and I get out a calendar. Doesn't matter who makes the calendar, doesn't matter the style, just as long as I have dates that I can look at. That I can try and manipulate what the league must do to improve their calendar situation. Because as we get bigger and better, and at the same time, more clubs are coming in, either as true expansion sides or getting the financial promotion through USL, the truth is we have to truly fix this problem of when the season begins. Because as of right now, and it has to be said, as of right now, we cannot have an MLS season begin anymore in the month of March. we cannot have a season where we're going to have to play more midweek games than to our liking. And in my opinion, that means we're going to have to now look at the month of February. We are now going to have to look at the month of February to begin the MLS regular season. And as I have said in the past, I truly believe we're going to have to begin the first weekend in February, but we're going to have to begin on the weekend after the Super Bowl of the NFL, because you don't want to lose any momentum, nor do you want to have any interference with a huge event that is going to be played. And at the same time, let's not forget, we're going to have to finagle our way into beginning the season with some of these cold weather teams, with the exception of Vancouver and Montreal, to play down in the warmer weathered climates of Florida, Texas, California, Southern California, Nashville, maybe Salt Lake. You know, that's probably more of a one of those, you know, iffy kind of climates. But the truth is, we need to go forward and think about how we're going to play these games. Because as I said, this is a situation where MLS is now, you know, you want all these teams coming in. You want to bring in the Austins. You want to bring in the Sacramentos. You want to bring in the Nashvilles. You want to bring in the Miamis, you know, the St. Louises. We're going to have to now start looking at how we're going to make up the schedule. Does this also mean the return of a Central Conference? A lot of questions, because if we are going to resume playing this way with two conferences, 15 teams each, there's going to be a lot of change. Whether you like it or not, there's going to be a lot of change. And as of right now, It's up to the league to make these changes and to make it viable. It's, you know, MLS, going back to MLS 1.0, playing at Yankee Stadium. That, my friends, is just not doable anymore. It's not. We can't do it. We're going to have to do some things now that will change this game forever. And if this means to have the first 2 to 3 weekends playing in warm climates, then so be it. Because as of right now, we are at a position where if we're going to have this game being played in cold weather all the time now because we're adjusting to the climate, then, my friends, we're just going to have to start it a lot earlier and a lot better so that we can reduce the fixture congestion that we know we're going to have. Plain and simple, we need to alleviate the fixture congestion that we are going to have, and it should be for the better. Like I've said, I will take my time to talk to people in MLS, to talk to the commissioner, talk to the schedule coordinator on how we're going to fix these things and get it right. I'll devote my time to them. I'll do it. I'll show them because I think we can do this. So that's all I can say about that situation. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to review both Eastern and Western Conference finals as we talk about, of course, we talk about the big wins for the Seattle Sounders. But before we do that, we got to go to the East. It was down south at Mercedes-Benz Stadium at the home of Atlanta United. And what does Toronto FC do? Toronto FC throws a wrench into the works. And they knock off the defending MLS Cup champions in Atlanta United by a final score of 2-1. Dwayne Rollins, 24th Minute Blog, Soccer Podcasting Network with Kevin Laramie, the Soccer Today Show. Dwayne, Vanny does it again. You know, I'm going to give credit to Frank DeBoer. I think he's adjusted very well in this league. But still, though, Vanny finds a way to throw out his magic, and it works to perfection once again.
Yeah, well, if you listen to Greg Vanney in the post-game comments, he was quick to sort of say that this was a game less about X's and O's and more about, you know, all those intangibles that sports fans like to talk about, grit and determination and heart and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's hard to define whether that's the truth or not. And, you know, I don't generally subscribe to the idea that one team ever wants it more than another. But certainly I think if you go to intangibles like experience and veteran leadership and stuff like that, I think it did play a role in being able to overcome their start, adjust their tactics on the fly, because clearly they got it wrong off the top of the game. But, you know, after the penalty, and it allowed them to calm themselves down, big save by Westberg, which is just, you know, that's scouting and athleticism to make that save. They knew, you know, had an idea of which direction he was going and able to get down strong and push that away. Could have been a different game, of course, had Martinez finished that. But they calmed at that point, and then they quickly get the goal back. And it's a very controlled game from that point forward. I mean, no one's going to – they're not winning any beauty awards by that result, but it was a road win. And Atlanta fans can say, you know, X amount of possession, X amount of shots. But, you know, you look at the – you know, the big stat that matters, of course, but even beyond that, they didn't get a lot on target. They had a lot of sort of half chances, quarter chances, of shots from a bit distance. You know, Westberg was forced to make, what, one save, kind of a big save after that in the dying minutes where he got big on the bad angle shot in stoppage time. But it was a controlled performance by a team that has played more bigger games than any team in this league, with possibly the exception of Seattle, in the last 4 years.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I can't believe what I'm looking here at the stats. I mean, for God's sakes, all four shots were shots on target, and obviously two of them went in. Benezet, who made it 1-1 the 14th minute on a wicked bender 10 minutes after Julian Gressel puts the opening goal in, and then you know, I don't know how many times you've seen Nick DeLeon play for DC United, scoring big goals for them, putting them in big-time position and big-time victories to move on to the next round. But my God, classic Nick DeLeon from distance. How he beat Brad Guzan was an unbelievable ripper from distance, Dwayne. Unreal.
Oh, certainly, yeah. You're scoring against one of the – you know, the greatest American keepers of all time, and, you know, leaving him without an opportunity at all to get to the ball there. You know, Atlanta, you know, they all claim that there was a foul further up the field. The way that the referees have called the games and the playoffs so far would leave that one a little bit flat. They're grasping at that point, but more to the point, they don't close DeLeon down. As you say, this is a veteran player that has scored big goals in the playoffs in the past, and they don't even have to go that far back in the past. Scored a big goal just two games ago in the playoffs, that was a laser that he scored the last game, but the goal he scored against DC in Stoller in extra time was quite the one that they wouldn't have to go back far in their memory, is what I'm saying. Look, I think the point with DeLeon more than almost anything else, is when you look at how TFC has been built since, you know, there's two eras of TFC. We'll put the first one aside because we all remember that and we'd rather not. But the when they become a good team, they've found ways to get value from every single mechanism within Major League Soccer. And Nick DeLeon came through the reentry draft, which is one of the least appreciated mechanisms that are out there. This is a guy that DC United gave up on. Thought he had no value left in the league, were willing to let him go if someone would just pick his contract up. TFC saw the value, got something out of him. He's been a key player for them all year, particularly through the stretch when they started to first turn things back around. They had a really bad stretch in June where they went 8 without a win. And then, of course, it's famously, they're now 13 without a loss. So it's been that kind of season here. But he kind of was one of those players that was just a massive key component to keep them, you know, getting 1 point instead of losing all three in the early days of getting things back on track. And that's invaluable because, you know, it's clear the way these playoffs have rolled out that although it is important to get a high seed, Toronto has shown that it is not vital. It is not impossible to make MLS Cup final from, you know, they did get one home game, but from a lower seed. And that's, you know, getting every point along the way just to get that ticket to the dance is what you need to do. And Nick DeLeon was key along that, those ways, even if he hadn't scored a laser of a goal to put themselves in, well, to clinch the spot in MLS Cup final.
No, absolutely. And, you know, once again, Vanny pushing all the right buttons. What do you think adjustments did he have to make inside the locker room at halftime at Mercedes-Benz Stadium? Obviously, you're thrilled because you're down by one. You quickly get back into the match with the equalizer. Nothing so much offensively happens, or, you know, great saves by Westberg. But still, though, what do you think was the big thing that you saw that Greg Vanny did at halftime in the locker room to maybe make adjustments that he had to make to put Toronto, you know, or at least find a way to put Toronto ahead as quickly as possible?
They took a step back, basically. They went into a block and were able to make it a solid play, which is, when you think about TFC's season, they haven't been known as a team that can shut teams down. You know, for a lot of the last 18 months, prior after 2017 championship in the last year and the first half of this year, they couldn't do that. They had to go out in the front foot at all times and be wide open and expose themselves to have a chance to win games because they'd have to win 3-2. And he showed, you know, a willingness to trust his defensive shape and their defensive responsibility of players that had been doubted at large portions of the season in terms of their ability to do that. They, you know, that adjustment happened after Atlanta got the penalty because they had been trying to play a little bit higher up the pitch and were getting absolutely burnt with the speed down the middle. That is Toronto's Achilles heel. Is they aren't very quick at the back. And you know, as any American listener knows, Michael Bradley has lost a step, although he's not nearly as bad as his critics suggest, but in particular at the MLS level. But, you know, on Atlanta's first goal, it was absolutely Bradley tried to step up and got caught out and couldn't catch back up, right? And they figured that out pretty quickly. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to notice that they're getting breakaways on you, and they should probably stop that, which is what the first 10 minutes was. But, you know, I think they just gave him the confidence and the shape to stick with it and to trust each other. And as he said, though, as Vanny said, X's and O's took a backseat in this game to just trust in one another and trust that they would have the talent to find a big moment again, because that's what we're talking about when you're talking about this team that is now playing in its fourth major final in the last four calendar years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And let's be honest, all deserved for Toronto moving forward into the final now, and this time around, Toronto goes to Seattle. You know, the first two times that Toronto and Seattle face each other in the MLS Cup final, it was all at BMO Field. Does the changing, well, I shouldn't say the changing of the venue, but this time around, because the venue now is Seattle, and they just announced that it sold out the Cup final at CenturyLink Field, what do you think Vanny needs to do to find an upset, because now it's not going to be at BMO Field?
I don't think Toronto's proven in this playoffs that they don't care about the road. I don't. I mean, with all due respect to fans, I've stood in many a fan crowd or many a supporter section in my life. I think that other than pomp and circumstance, we don't really do much to affect the game. So I don't really worry. I don't think TFC is worried about 60,000 people in there, 2,000 of which will be from Toronto, by the way, or at least supporting Toronto, based on talking to some of the groups today. That's about how many tickets that they've were able to acquire in that building. So it should be fun to have a significant away presence there as well. More the worry to me when it comes to that game and the venue is it's on turf. That's not ideal for the injuries. It's not ideal for Toronto's weakness in the sense that the ball will play fast on that turf and allow Seattle to do, you know, get out and get some speed and some creativity with Morris, particularly off the wings against a slower back line. I think that's the challenges that the venue is going to give to Toronto. You know, similarly to the MLS Cups in Toronto, which of course were a month later, we were talking a lot in those lead ups to whether weather would be an advantage for Toronto. But I think when it gets to those games, what I saw on those nights back in 17 and 16 was that once the ball kicks off at MLS Cup final, all bets are off. It's really not a game that goes like other games. It's a championship game. I don't think where it's happening, it could be on the moon. And I think that other factors are at play than venue and fans in those particular moments.
No, I agree with you there. I expect to have a cracking game. I know we're going to get it on November the 10th, and it should be a lot of fun. Just to ask you this, Canadian Premier League question, if you like, how has the opening season been for the Canadian Premier League? Has it been a rounding success? Is everyone happy so far? Will there be Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto moving out of MLS to the Canadian Premier League? Not so much, you know, into next year, the year after, but maybe somewhere down the road.
Yeah, that one, I 20 years down the road, maybe. I think that you'll see what I call the Welsh model for quite a while. And for those who don't know what I mean by that, if you look at how football is played in Wales, they have a couple teams in the Premier League and the rest are playing in the Welsh League. It's similar here. How has it been? Look, I was at Media Day last Friday for the first leg of the final, which is in Hamilton, Ontario, which for those who don't know is it's New Jersey to New York. There's your comparison. So it was kind of a Toronto adjacent, but I was out there and the commissioner spoke at that time and he said that they were basically playing was the victory this year and that they had to be better next year in a lot of logistical ways. Won't bore you too much with that, but there's little details that they need to get right. They were sort of learning as they went this year, and as he quite aptly put it, everyone was cheering for them in year one and now the real work begins because you only have, you know, the first impression's done. The honeymoon's over. A champion will be crowned on Saturday. Now you have to follow up with that because we don't have the momentum of a launch anymore to sort of lean back on. And, you know, hopefully we get some expansion announcements very soon. That's really, I think, the biggest challenge for this league in the next couple of years is it's just seven teams is just simply too small. Makes scheduling difficult because you have to have bye weeks and midweek games, and travel is a very, very, it's very difficult in this country, even more so than in MLS, because there are less direct flights in Canada between cities than there are in the US. So, you know, if you're in Halifax, which is a city of about 350,000 people and an airport the size that would reflect that, to try and get to Victoria, similar size city, 3,000 miles away. So you're going to have to fly to Toronto and then fly to Vancouver and then fly to Victoria. And that's, you know, think about that and when you're trying to do that a couple times in a week. And they've got to figure that stuff out a little bit more logistically and get some more teams so that they can reduce the amount of travel. And I think that will make it a much better league. But the talent has been quite surprisingly good. You know, we saw Cavalry, which is a team based in Calgary, who has been the best team. They won both the fall and the spring season and are hosting the final game of the final, although they are trailing 4-1-0. We saw them beat Vancouver, of course, in the Canadian Championship. And that, although, you know, certainly you play that game 10 times, it probably goes differently most of those times. But it did demonstrate to anyone who observed it that these were legit professional teams that had a puncher's chance when you play a cup game. And that's, I think, was quite a good sign for the league in its first year.
Absolutely. Dwayne, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you on the day after the championship final. Thank you as always, and I'll talk to you next time. Thank you very much, Dwayne.
Cool. Bye.
Bye-bye. At Dwayne Rollins, the 24th Minute Blog, Soccer Today with Kevin Laramie on the Sports Podcasting Network. Go ahead, take a look. It's a lot of fun, and they do a good job over there along with Kevin. I'm over there whenever he needs me, and, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of good times to talk about soccer, not just in the United States but in Canada as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and, you know, all I can tell you is that, you know, they do a great job up in there covering the game for Canada, for all Canadians. And go ahead and take a listen. If you haven't already, do it now. If you are doing it now, good job on you guys, because they do a great job. So as we get ready to talk about the other team that will be in the final, and that other team is the Seattle Sounders. They go on to win the Western Conference Final, shocking the Supporters Shield champions in LAFC. And to join me to talk about that is, of course, my SB Nation colleague of Sounder at Heart and the one and only, one of the best soccer lawyers I know in the West.
Or the only soccer lawyer you know?
Well, I know many others, but you're the only one I know in the Western. You're the only one I know on the Western side of the country. And that's, of course, Mickey Turner. And Mickey, my God. Seattle, you know, never doubting Seattle. Obviously, we all know that they're a dangerous side, but, you know, while they were down by a goal early in this matchup, it was basically the Lodero Rui Diaz show that really put the Sounders ahead, and now they're hosting this MLS Cup Championship final at CenturyLink Field.
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing game. You know, they started off pretty much on the front foot, or at least equal with LAFC, I would say. And then they gave up a goal after a somewhat questionable penalty, but it was – not penalty, but foul. But Bailey did a good job to wiggle himself free and draw a little bit of contact. And then the free kick goes in. And at that point, even though the Sounders were probably, the better team marginally through the first 15 minutes, they were down in LAFC at Bank of California was rocking. And the Sounders didn't put their heads down. They didn't show any real signs of losing the plot. There was one dangerous chance shortly after that when Leardom got bodied off the ball and a shot came in that Fry saved. But then they managed to get their way back into the game with some great footwork by Raul Rui Diaz, who took a nice pass from Nico Lodero. Got a little bit lucky with a bit of a deflection, but dispatched the shot from about 17 yards out, right past Tyler Miller. And then 5 minutes later, they come down the field again. Rui Diaz again is able to hold up the ball, get it out to Jovan Jones, who works his way up to the wing. Sends it into Lodero and puts in a shot that the place I was at, nobody actually thought he had scored. They thought he'd gone wide and behind the net. And so it took a second for people to react to the goal. And from there, the Sounders really weren't particularly threatened by LAFC. And, Schmetzer talked about it after the game and a little bit at his media availability today. They just executed a nearly flawless tactical plan, save for the free kick. And really, there were a couple of opportunities, but save that, the Sounders were clearly the better team on the day and definitely deserved to win.
I want to talk about Brian Schmetzer for a moment. Now, obviously, he was the head coach of the Sounders team back in their USL days. And then when they came to MLS, Ziggy Schmid was hired. to take over the Sounders team, and Schmetzer remained on the coaching staff until Ziggy, of course, was let go by the club, and then Schmetzer comes in back as the head coach of the Sounders team. What improvements do you think he has made as a manager on the MLS level? Because we've seen in the past, you know, Thorsten, who was with the Vancouver Whitecaps at the time, as their manager in USL action until they came to MLS. And then, of course, you know, he didn't last the full season. What does Schmetzer, do you think he has done tactically different with this Sounders team than maybe, you know, USL coaches who have come to MLS and they just have not done the job?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer. He's been obviously with the Sounders for such a long time. As you mentioned, you know, as a player through the A-League, through the USL, as an assistant. And someone actually asked him about that today, or I should say asked Garth Lagerwey about that today. And Garth didn't really have the answer either. I think, you know, what he has done since he's been a manager, and let's confine it to his managerial career with the Sounders and not so much his assistant days, but I think his man management, team management has been one of his greatest assets. As many may know, he is a self-admitted player's coach. He likes to give responsibility and accountability to the players because I think he understands that, at some point players will tune the coach out if they hear the same thing over and over again. So it's better to get the players to buy into what you're doing, and then you can use them as an asset. And he has done a good job, I think, of adjusting tactics midstream in game, which is something that has been helpful for the Sounders as they have historically, except for this year, gotten off to slow starts. And so he's not afraid to make those adjustments and try to get, try to change things if things aren't working. So that those are probably his two biggest assets, is just his team management, his man management, his mid game adjustments. And then additionally, I think just, you know, as being a lifelong Sounder, he just has that loyalty and passion for the team and wants to see them do well. And that, I think, is what drives him to his success.
And I think what you also see, if you don't mind me saying this, you're seeing these players believe in him. And I think that's the number one thing when you talk about Brian Schmetzer, that the players believe in him. They believe in what he is saying. They believe in his tactics. They believe in his messaging. And I think that's a positive right there for the Sounders because, you know, what he's done has been, let's be honest, it's been unbelievable. And, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for, you know, keeping this club, you know, on the straight and narrow and finding ways to get into the final. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, he's done a phenomenal job since taking over as head coach, even understanding that they've had struggles and haven't really put together that complete season, probably since 2014 when they won the MLS, when they won the Supporters Shield, that, and part of that is just due to the nature of MLS. Some of that is due to just what, you know, you go through during a season, losing players to injury and things like that. So that's just been, he's just done a phenomenal job with the team, and, you know, he's basically got his ticket to stay with the Sounders for as long as he wants. And it's at this point, it's hard to argue against him being one of the best coaches in the league.
No, I agree with you. Completely agree with you. There's no comparison. There's no argument. He has done the job, and he deserves to keep his job. And I wouldn't put it past him if he did. Sold out already. MLS Cup Championship at CenturyLink Field. Does that mean all the tarps in the upper deck are gone?
Yep. They announced it today. 69,000 plus tickets are sold. That is at basically capacity. CenturyLink is and can be configured for around 72,000, but that is typically for concerts where you have seating on the field, obviously. We asked Garth about that today at training or at the media avail, and if it was possible that they would bump that up from 69 to 72. He said that's highly unlikely, or, you know, it's unlikely to happen. Due to the fact that many of those extra seats would be on the field, which obviously would be logistically difficult to play a soccer game with fans camped out on the 50-yard line or in the center circle. So that's not going to happen. Yeah, tickets sold out extremely quickly. There's been a bit of consternation out here in the fan base with how the tickets were allocated. Season ticket holders were allowed to purchase their own seats as part of the opt-in pay-as-you-go program throughout the playoffs. That didn't cause so much of a problem. What did cause a problem was that season ticket holders were also allowed to then purchase six additional seats to their season ticket accounts, and those tickets went extremely quickly. I think the sale started shortly after Atlanta lost to Toronto, and then they just, you know, the fans just went wild, snapped them up. There were basically none left for the sale to the general public at 10 a.m. Most people couldn't get in. I heard anecdotally that there were only about 7,000 tickets available for the public sale. And again, those tickets went with that. And we haven't been able to nail down exactly how fast they sold out to the minute, but you can guess based on the timing that it was probably no more than about an hour and a half.
So in other words, your services are not needed. No.
I don't think so. Yeah, it's a pretty crazy situation. It's a pretty crazy situation to see it sell out that quickly. I mean, I don't think it was ever particularly surprised that it was going to sell out that fast. It was obviously the Sounders' first chance to host MLS Cup. Yeah, they've been there a couple of times before, but those were on the road. And, you know, there's something special, obviously, about having the game hosted at home. And it's going to be a pretty crazy party, lots of stuff, and it'll be nice for the Sounders and the fan base to be able to host MLS Cup here.
Now, let me ask you this. How is the buzz different from the Open Cup Finals? I know Sounders won four Open Cup titles. You won on the road at DC United. You won on the road at Sporting Kansas City. You've won twice at home against, I believe, both Chicago and Columbus. If I can ask you this, you know, how is the buzz different? Or maybe it's similar. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, with the differences of tournaments, is it the same? Is it a little different? What's the feeling right now in Seattle because you are hosting the championship final?
Oh, I think it's completely different. The U.S. Open Cup buzzes one of the road wins was against Philly and D.C. And then they
right,
lost.
Philly, I'm sorry, Philly.
Yes, they lost to Sporting Kansas City on the road. But
that's right.
I think one of the issues is that the U.S. Open Cup, you know, at least at that time, was a somewhat not well-known tournament. People, you know, kind of understood the premise, but they knew it wasn't MLS Cup. And that's really the difference here. This is for the championship. This is for the big trophy. This is the one that kind of immortalizes you in soccer history. And this will, you know, as far as one-off games go, this will be the first one that the Seattle area has hosted. I think I'm not sure if they've ever hosted one. I'd have to go back and look. There's obviously, you know, WNBA titles as well as NBA series. But as far as like a one-off event with a major sport, it's the one of the first ones. Probably, you know, I can't recall off the top of my head if when the Sounders went to you know, Soccer Bowl or whatever it was called in the NFL, if that was hosted here. But it's going to be really crazy based just simply on the demand that was displayed through the purchase of the ticket sales. Everyone's talking about it. You're going to have massive media coverage starting next week, I would say. To be fair, you know, this is still a Seahawks and Husky town, so those sports will certainly get priority, and they're both at home this weekend as well. So I think you'll have to wait until Monday to really see things ramp up, but I think you're going to see them ramp up very quickly, especially as soon as MLS starts to descend. With all of the the officials and all of the players and all of the pundits and what have you, then that's really when you're going to see a real big party. And then obviously on the day of the game, you're going to have 69,000 in the stadium and, you know, tens of thousands at watch parties around the city. So, you know, the time of the game is going to maybe dampen things a little bit because you're talking about Sunday at noon, which means you're going to be – most people will be up around 8 or 9 o'clock to make their way downtown.
Yep.
So that will certainly be a little tough. Again, that's you know, people will just maybe have to have one less drink Saturday night.
That goes for you too, you know.
Yeah, yes, it does. Yes, it does. I'll be on my best. I'll be on my best behavior. That's for sure. I don't want to oversleep.
Liar, liar. No.
Yeah.
You'll be bringing something. You got one of those little like you know, pocket sized canteens. You'll fill it with something. I know you. You'll find a mixologist somewhere.
Well, you know, security will certainly be much tighter than it was normally, and it's usually pretty tight around MLS. But my other issue is I'll be in the press box, so it's probably not a good idea for me to have too much booze coming out of my mouth.
Just sneak in. Sneak. No, no, no. Who said that? Don't say that. No. But anyway, Mickey, look, have fun in 2 weeks. It's going to be a big celebration. Just make sure you stop off at Starbucks and have a nice cup of Java. I think that's the only way it's going to wake you up.
Oh, yeah. There'll be at least two or three probably before I get downtown, that's for sure.
That's for sure. I will say this. Here's a quick little joke for you. You ever watch British comedies like on PBS or anything like that?
Occasionally. Not very often, though.
Have you ever heard of the show called Are You Being Served or No?
Yes, I have, of course.
Do you remember Mrs. Slocum, and she's got a box of chocolates, and then all of a sudden because she has a drinking problem, all of a sudden she went, you know, straight down, and they're like, you know, at the opera, they go like, or the ballet, they go, surely she has been drinking, no, drinking, no, out of the box, liqueur chocolates.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I had to do it. All right, Mickey, have a good night. Have a good time. Have a good night tonight. And good luck on the 10th of November. And yeah, have a good night. Thank you very much.
Sounds good. I will talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later. Mickey Turner, SB Nation colleague, sounder at heart, and the best soccer lawyer on the West Coast that I know of. So you know what? This is going to be a very interesting break now. And then, of course, after November 10th, we go back into the CONCACAF Nations League. This time, the United States will host Canada over down in Explorer Stadium in downtown Orlando, Florida, at the Purple Palace on Church Street. And then they'll make their way on the road to Cuba to finish off their CONCACAF Nations League tournaments. Excuse me, and we'll see what happens going forward. But this is going to be something interesting. This is going to be something special when it comes to U.S. men's national team. And don't forget, of course, for the Open Cup qualifiers, we're going to finish up the second round with that big matchup between Soda City Sorenex and the Georgia Revolution Reserves. And the winners of that one will be hosting Nashville United. So there's that opportunity right now for one of those two sides. You know, they got an opportunity right in front of them for Open Cup qualifying. And as we already know, the schedule's already out for the November games, and that'll be later on the 23rd and the 24th of November of that weekend. So it should be exciting. It should be a lot of fun, and cannot wait to see what's going to happen there. As we continue on here, and you know, we're watching the USL Championship matches going on here. It's just been unreal and unbelievable to watch how these things are, you know, progressing. And it's been absolutely brilliant. And, of course, once again, Bob Lilly, who is now running the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, you know, what he's been able to do and capable of doing, if you think about it, it's just been nothing short of marvelous. It has been marvelous to watch. And you got to give Bob Lilly credit once again for going out and being that hard-nosed coach that can do a job. He can do a job. It's just unbelievable what he is able and capable of doing. So all you can say is for Bob Lilly and the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, it's going to be exciting to watch. And let's see what else they'll be able to do in the USL Championship League action. So we'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen. And it's just going to be fun when we get there, and we'll see what they will be able to do going forward. A lot of questions, you know, going into the future of American soccer. A lot of questions that, you know, how is the schedule going to be? As I've said already, going into 2020, what will happen with the league when we get to the World Cup in 2026 when they actually host it? Not really worrying about 2022 because why? It's very simply put. This is why. Because we need to know what's going to happen when we get when we get to basically when we get into these teams that are going to be bigger, and you know, will it help the league get stronger? I think that's the number one question we have here, because we don't want to see the national team roster pool get diluted. We really don't want to see that. And at the same time, you know, who's available and how's it going to get done? When will it get done? So, you know, as of right now, there's a big question mark. There is a huge question mark in the future of MLS. But we just have to be honest with ourselves here. It's a big question mark right now when it comes into the future. As of right now, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29. 29 teams, at least till 2022, 2023. We'll see what happens. I think they'll do one more team. And then, you know, are we going to have just Eastern and Western Conference? Or are we going to add a Central Conference? Now, if we do add a Central Conference, and we add one, that would mean one more team would be added from the West. That would be 30 teams altogether. And I truly believe that MLS should stop right there. To be honest with you, they should have stopped at 20 or at least 22. So until then, at this particular point in time, what we are having now is a situation of how are you going to set up the schedule? What's it going to be about? How are you going to do this? How are you going to do that? Well, once again, you know, the brains are working. You know, I'm trying to find a way to see what needs to happen so that we, you know, what makes sense for the for MLS. What makes sense for the league? What should they do? How should they do it? And then all of a sudden, you know, how are you going to make it work? So for now, I haven't really thought about the schedule makeup of MLS in the future. I think as of right now, we have to worry more about if we're going to have 30 teams in this league, and hopefully it does end at 30, how do we set it up? Well, in the East, I think it's pretty simple if we go to the East first. And obviously, this is what I think should be. Obviously, we'll have Atlanta United, and then we have DC United, and then moving on, you'll have Montreal Impact, New England Revolution, you'll have NYCFC, the New York Red Bulls and RBNY, you'll have Orlando, you will have Miami, you will have Philadelphia. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And Toronto FC at the moment. So that is your Eastern Conference for the future. Not saying this is what the league is going to do. This is just, once again, my belief of what might happen down the road. Now, the teams that will be built as the Central Conference, you will have the Chicago Fire. You will have FC Cincinnati. You will have the Columbus Crew. You will also have, in Texas, Austin FC. You will have FC Dallas. You will have the Houston Dynamo. You will also have Nashville SC. And Austin, yep. Okay, so we have Nashville after Houston. You'll have Minnesota. 2, 4, 6, 8. Minnesota. And then as I'm looking up and down, because you're going to have three Texas clubs. And we'll get back to that in a minute, but you'll probably have St. Louis and Sporting Kansas City. So 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Yep, and now we go to the West. How would that get set up? Well, it's really simple. You'll have Colorado Rapids, excuse me, both L.A. clubs and LAFC and the L.A. Galaxy. And then you would have Portland Timbers, Real Salt Lake, San Jose, Sacramento Republic, Seattle, Vancouver. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So how are you going to get to 30? 30 is the question mark. Well, what would you do? Who would you step up and allow to become the 30th club for Major League Soccer? My candidates, if there's not going to be a true expansion side that comes up, I would suggest, and I would say it would be between two clubs in USL Championship. I think the two clubs that should fight for it, you know, in my opinion, I think has shown enough clout in the Western Conference right now, even though one of them, is an expansion side in the USL Championship. But still, though, I think they've proven that they can support a professional soccer side. The two clubs I think should fight coming out of USL Championship for that last spot in the West in my made up mock conferences, East, Central, and West, it should be fought between either Phoenix Rising or New Mexico United. The only thing that is stopping both of them from going into this is building a soccer specific stadium for their own. We know Phoenix is playing in a pop-up stadium. We know that New Mexico United, pardon me. Pardon me, 1 second. Oh, boy. Sorry about that. And we all know that New Mexico United are currently playing in a minor league baseball stadium that is home to the Albuquerque Isotopes in Albuquerque, New Mexico. If they can build a proper soccer stadium not far away from that minor league baseball stadium, I think New Mexico United automatically gets its foot further into the door than Phoenix would. But we'll have to see what's going to happen, and we'll have to wait and see. But then again, these are just my own personal beliefs, and that's as far as it goes. But I want to thank my guests tonight. Of course, Dwayne Rollins, the 24th Minute Blog, Soccer Today with Kevin Laramie, as well as part of the Soccer Podcasting Network over in Montreal and Toronto, Canada. Mickey Turner, SB Nation colleague, Sounder at Heart, as it will be the Seattle Sounders taking on Toronto FC, this time at CenturyLink Field in Seattle, Washington, at a sold-out venue, live on ABC at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Take care. So long, and bye-bye for now.